Hi and welcome to another What's Current podcast from Napier. And today we are at Doncaster Cables. I'm joined with my co-host, Andy.
How are you doing, everyone?
I'm all right, Andy. You?
Yeah, good, good.
Good to see you. And also we've got Aaron here again. Now, Aaron, we've done a podcast before, quite a long time ago now, I would have thought, but we just thought it would be good to get together again and maybe talk about something completely different. So what have we got in store today, Aaron? What we're going to get into?
Yeah, I look forward to it. We can get into anything cable related, so feel free to ask anything that you'd like. I brought some samples, thought we could touch a bit on some Arctic grade cable, how all cables are not the same. We spoke earlier about some Fireshore cables and fire performance cables and the different standards. And am I allowed to say we're looking at doing a CPD, or will that be edited out?
No, we can talk about anything. Yeah. No, podcast, let's be casual.
Top secret or not. So yeah, trying to do some CPD content and some learning for the Napier members. So we've had a few conversations about different things there as well.
Yeah, so we're going to try and get through quite a bit, aren't we? But like I say, we were talking earlier before we started recording, and we think it's important for people to understand our members, wider industry, that not all cables are the same. And me and Andy, as sparkies that have been there, installed the stuff, and we've had a little play with some of the stuff this morning. We want to get into that because it's something that electricians out there aren't fully aware of. And we've spoke before about, and you would have come across this, Andy, that you go in and you talk to your wholesaler about, I want this particular type of socket, I want this consumer unit or distribution board, whatever it may be, but we seem to leave the most important thing that connects it all together, which is the cable.
Yeah, and I have a theory on that. So if you went back to heyday of cable making, 70s, 80s, over 85% was made in the UK, and it was very self-regulated. So people sold on my cables better than yours, and because everything was self-regulated and people made to the highest specifications, it never really came on people's radar that there was cheap alternatives available. And if you fast track to now, complete role reversal, it's all price driven. 85% of what's installed is imported into the country from overseas, and I just don't think that danger is really aware in people's minds, where people probably are familiar with people cutting corners with lights and consumer units, not so much with cable because of the history we've got. But that history is not there anymore, in my opinion. It's completely changed. And the industry is different.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, isn't it, like you say, because if there's a few UK manufacturers back in the day, you knew it was tried and tested and was going to do what it said on the tin kind of thing, but you can buy absolutely anything off the internet. I mean, the same for accessories and the stuff I've just talked about, but I suppose in the cable world, we need to just be aware that that's out there, isn't it? What you're getting from import isn't going to be the same as especially what you guys produced at Doncaster.
No, they're definitely just not the same altogether. It's different manufacturing techniques. When you look at all the processes we've got in the factory, and we're going to take Andy around later, I think he's quite excited for that.
But yeah, I love a factory tool, by the way. Do love one.
We're drawing copper wires. We're controlling all the diameters and how much we anneal those and how flexible they are. We're making the compounds. We're putting the compounds onto the copper and the sheaths. So we're in control of all these stages. If everything's price-driven, you can cut corners at every single stage. You can make the copper a slightly lower diameter, 0.1, 0.2 smaller. No one's going to notice, but the conductor resistance goes up, the operating temperature goes up. And if every decision is based on price, this is what people are doing. And they're now making cables cheaper with either less materials or less quality of materials. So it's just a different market altogether.
And just tell us more, Aaron, about that fact of, say, like I go there and it's got a base set on the cable, or it might have a BS, but again, we talked earlier a little bit, but that's not always proof that cable is to standard. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so you can get a British standard on a cable, and maybe we'll come on to the fire one as a separate piece because that's more of a complex one, but you'll get a British standard on there, BS6004 on Twin and Earth, for example. If it's only got that standard number on, a manufacturer can declare that. So you're basically just taking the manufacturer's word that they've made it to that standard and everything's right. The next step up would be third party approval, which would then be BASEC is the main one, British Approval Service for Cables. And that is a big step, but in my view it just demonstrates that people can manufacture correctly if they want to. It doesn't necessarily mean that everything they make is manufactured correctly. And there's been examples in the past with we had the Atlas Cablo recall, which was on the BBC Fake Britain. There was 20 million metres of cable came into the UK. That was recalled. That was all BASEC approved. and they actually duped BASIC because they were making containers, shipping it to the UK, and BASIC were going and testing stuff that they'd put to one side. So there's still that risk there, but having BASIC approval is, for me, it's just the minimum for cables, I'd say.
Yeah, and what do you think of it?
Well, for me, it's like, we're going to talk about low smoke fume cable as well, but as an installer, I weren't aware of this, and it's something I've got to educate myself on, because a cable was a cable. You as an installer, you're hoping that all these checks have happened, and what Aaron's talked about, like the cable being, sorry, the conductor being smaller and et cetera, that isn't the case. Mm. You're just buying it on face value. And I think that's good today that we're discussing this for our members.
Yeah.
So they're aware of it, because I wasn't aware of it. It's so I've got to learn a bit more about it, and hopefully today I get that education.
Yeah, it is fascinating, and obviously, you know, I've spoke to Aaron before and had the factory tour and saw how your stuff is made, but like we talked about before about that minute difference in conductor size. Mm. Aaron showed a great example earlier of an SWA cable. That actually, what it was printed on the side. Obviously, for audio listeners, we're not going to show the cable. We might show it for visual learners later. But what was printed on the side was 50 mil. The copper core conductor was 50 mil, but it was actually 35. I mean, that's just that blows my mind, because as a designer, you're designing a spec of a building with SWA in the building, wherever cable it may be. You know, that's massive for current capacity. That's not meeting the demands of the load of the building.
And that were completely intentional. So there's actually a public notice published for that cable. And they did the whole range. So they did cables marked as 35, that were 25, 70, that were actually 50. They did the full range, and it was imported by a UK importer's instruction. And when they did all the investigation on that, they talked about how, if it caused a fire, how the fire brigade do their checks. They normally go to the side of the cable and tick that the size is right. So, yeah, it should be a 70mm cable. Would that have caused the fire? No, it's 70mm. No one goes and checks that it's actually 70mm conductor. But that's an extreme example. There's just loads in the market where people are just trying to make it the bare minimum or just below and make a really cheap product. And it is market-driven. If someone goes to a wholesaler and asks for cheapest reel of 2.5 to an earth, what you're actually asking for then, as an electrician, in my view, is you want a reel of twin and earth with the lowest amount of copper possible and the cheapest grade of insulation and the cheapest sheathing compound made in a country where there's the cheapest labour costs and possibly the cheapest QC in there as well, because that's really what you're asking for when you're asking for that cheapest possible product. And I don't think people see that, because the UK is so... been so heavily self-regulated in the past, and now it just isn't.
I think if you get my install head on, like, you have a certain brand of a fuse board or a socket or a light fitter you always go to because it's reliable. Same with your tools, isn't it? Certain people like certain brand of drills, don't they? They don't go buy a cheap drill from B&Q brand or whatever.
I would, because I'm tight, but I only do DIY.
But with cable, as I was just talked about, they're quite happy to have that conversation with the wholesaler, but when they're going to buy a fuse board or sockets, I won't fit that make.
Yeah.
I only fit that brand. That doesn't seem to be a conversation with cable. That's a bit strange, isn't it?
It has been for a number of years, and you're quite right. Like, you know, when I was guilty of that myself, because I was, you know, especially when I was working for myself, I would have been going, right, if the job was spec, say, on housing association work, they would have checked, you know, it was back in the day, I'm talking about Crabtree Starbreaker boards, it had to be Expel Air fans, and those were all spec by the housing association for these properties. But actually, my saving was in the cable. So I was guilty of that myself. So, you know, and then we've discovered today, when we've been having a play with some of that cable, like, that you've showed us, like, you know, that when you go to strip the thing, you, like, it's costing you time anyway, or like you say, it's not up to spec. So why would you always go for the cheapest option? It just makes sense as we're speaking to you and saying it, because actually it's such an important component of any electrical install, even though one of the most important.
The most important.
And going in and asking for the cheapest product, you've hit the nail on the head there, Aaron. Then you're actually, you know, you get what you pay for in this world, don't you? It's like your three quote situation, isn't it? Where you go, highest or no, you're too much. The middle, yeah, maybe that's, but then, you know, some people go, oh, you're the lowest, I'll go for you. You can't do that in electrical installations.
No, and it's become the norm, and it's really buying risk. It's a strong statement, but you're buying risk. And if something's got less of copper content, you're buying something with a shorter lifespan, because it's going to operate hotter than what the other alternative one that's a bit more higher quality is. So the PVC is going to break down faster, the cable's going to become brittle quicker over time, and it might only last 10 years rather than 25 years. So it's all those little bits that come into the buying decisions, really.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about what sort of, so our members are aware, because like I say, as installers, we probably be aware. And one of the things that sprang to my mind then when we were talking about that, those steel wide armours and other ranges that were on the side that were sized as 50mm, say they were 35. Sometimes even as an electrician, when you've gone to get that and you're assuming it's the right size because it's written on the side, like you said, the fire brigade investigators would, you might even not notice that as a spark, because with the, you know, you look at the cores all together in triangle form or whatever they may be, you go, oh yeah, it looks like 50mm. Yeah. So you might not be aware, but what are some of the danger signs to look out for maybe some of the twin and earth stuff we've talked earlier about, maybe the chalk content or how easy it is to strip? What are some of the things, Aaron, that sort of a good quality cable like ones from Doncaster would be against a cheap import?
Yeah, so before that one, the armoured one, that's exactly what happened. So one of our sales reps in the past was next to, it was at a trade show, and he was next to somebody who sold lugs and accessories, and someone came to complain that the lugs were crap because they kept falling off the end of the cable. And our guy said, can I just take a bit of that cable? And he brought it back, and that's how it all came to light. But there were loads in the marketplace.
It makes sense as a cost saving to make it a bit smaller on the copper, you know, it's going to make cable cheaper, isn't it?
Imagine the cost saving.
You know, so it makes sense from a business point of view, but from a safety point of view, it doesn't make any sense, does it?
Yeah, no. And then cable-wise, I always have the same thing. Just buy from somebody that you trust. Buy from a reputable manufacturer. And in my view, there's not many of those left, us being one, Prismian being another, as an example, where we see them as a true competitor. If you're looking at the side of a cable and you can't clearly see who made that cable, that'd ring alarm bells to me. And then what support can you get from that manufacturer? For me, there's a lot of value in being able to pick up the phone to someone in the UK and say, you know, I've got a question on this, or this reading's not what I were expecting to have, and speaking to a technical department that's here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's key, especially when you've got SWAs and you may want to use the actual steel wire as the CPC. And you might need to phone up technical helpline to go, actually, we're looking to use that as a CPC. Can I do that? Or do it and run a separate CPC with the SWA?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think knowing you for a while now, Aaron, as well, in your business, I think that's one of the things that your technical support is there, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yeah, they do it through, so they support our customers, so the wholesalers. But electricians can ask the wholesaler, they ring up, and they're doing R1, R2 calculations all the time with calf steel content and whether it's an equivalent earth requirements.
Yeah,
they do that, and a lot of cable sizings as well. They do a lot of cable sizings when people ring up.
So tell us a little bit more then. So you've talked about the markings on the side. You know, there must be aspects of the flexibility of it, the way it feels, the way it looks. Even I can almost, like, you showed us some examples today.
It's hard for the audio listeners to look at it and see it, appreciate it, but we've got this low smoke cable here.
Apparently.
And we can
allegedly.
And we tried stripping it, didn't we, Steve? And we had some good fun. And you can clearly see there's no French chalk in there. There's no powder in there. And it was a real nightmare to
strip.
And when you did strip it, the actual outer PVC, the white PVC, stuck to the actual liner neutral PVC colouring, didn't it? And for identification purposes as well. And just actually using
it. Feel of it.
I mean, trying to push it back into the black box.
Yeah, and it is quite a difficult one because most of the cables look the same. So you can get some visual differences, or something might be stiffer, but all of the tests are hidden in the compounds and the conductor size, which electricians can't really see. And that's why the only advice we use is buy from someone like you
trusted.
But it's incredibly difficult. I know we're a podcast and an audio, but if I just put that one on the table and anyone that's watching it can see, so just put a yellow flex in front of Andy. So what cable would you say that was at, just by looking at it?
Size.
Not size, just cable type.
I don't see, it's the Arctic Flex, what we use on a 110 leaders, I would
transformers,
say. Transformers. Yeah. You know, temporary supplies and stuff like that. But again, I know it's meant to be a bit more robust, that Arctic Flex, isn't it? It's designed to be a bit stronger than your normal Flex, but yeah, it feels a bit similar to this cable as well.
Yeah.
So he's going to tell us that's a Doncaster cable now.
It's not a Doncaster cable. It's not an Arctic Flex.
Oh, is it not?
No, it's just a yellow flex. But I'd say 100% of electricians will pick that up and think, oh, that's an Arctic Flex for a 110 lead. But if you look at the harmonised code on the side of there that's printed on, it's HO5VV-F.
Yes, I see that.
Is the harmonised code for an ordinary duty flexible. It's not an Arctic Flex, it's just a standard Flex that's being coloured yellow, sold into the market, and people would use that, assuming it was, and it isn't.
Yeah.
And that's just a...
Yeah,
it's just quite a good example of how it's so difficult to actually pick up on these things, because visually they look right, but they're not.
Unless that you're aware of the coding numbers that you've just pointed out, which most installers are not going to know all those coding numbers off the top of your head.
Yeah,
that's going to be very hard to spot, isn't it, in the real world situation?
So I think from that point of view, that's the only advice, isn't it? Looking at it, you know, logically, from people you trust, ask for a brand, and we started the podcast with that, really. So ask for a brand of a particular type of cable that you know is going to be fit the bill for what you want and safe. Don't go cheap is probably our best advice, isn't it, really?
And sometimes you've got no choice. Sometimes that wholesale only has that particular brand there, isn't it? That's an issue as well, isn't it? Because if you need it there and then, what are you going to do?
That's a good point, actually, what Andy brings up with the wholesaler there, because obviously you don't sell direct. I know you sell small amounts direct of certain types of cable, but if your middleman, for want of a better word, is the wholesaler, that then the installer is the other end. How's that conversation go with wholesalers?
It's challenging. So we work with what we class as distribution partners or wholesale partners. But someone has to understand our cables will be more expensive than an imported cable because they've got more copper content. The materials are better. There's definitely 100 metres on the reel, not 98 like most of the imports. So for all those reasons, and the UK manufacturing, traceability, technical service, etc., it's going to be a bit more expensive. The general consensus is cable's cable, which it isn't. But then if you're trying to get a wholesaler on board and they want to stock Doncaster cables, they've then got to sell that to their electricians, and that can be challenging. So we're trying to do a lot of work just to educate the whole market, and mainly electricians, to just tell them they've got a choice. So you do have a choice with cable. You can specify your brand, and even if your wholesaler doesn't have it, they can start a conversation with us, and they can become a partner and a stockist. And it's just making people aware that there is a choice in cable, and they don't just have to accept whatever's in the market, because the vast majority is poor.
And do you think that builders have to do more? So you know, the new government's coming in, we've got to build so many houses. That's new build houses. So you think about all those new build housing sites, they're all going to be installing twin and a half cables, for argument's sake. Do you think they need to be more saying, look, we only want these cables in our new houses going forward? You know, a certain type of what we've talked about today.
Yeah, I think so. And there's lots of stuff behind the scenes with our products. So if you look at these new builds and the road to net zero, when we benchmark our business against the other cables that are in the market, the imported ones, we're so far ahead. We're scope 1 and 2 carbon neutral. So all the stuff we do on site, we're carbon neutral. We've got renewable energy 100%, zero waste to landfill, 94% recycling of materials. So all those things are in the background, which help those builders. And plus we import copper rod as an example, but when we import one container, we can make 1 million metres of cable. A container of finished cable comes in from a longer journey from Turkey, and it's probably got a quarter of that in it. So for all those bits, CO2 wise and sustainability, we're so far ahead, and that might help with the new build, because predominantly that's the lowest margin, highly competitive area. And unfortunately the sustainability bit isn't for everybody, and it's not going to be for a one man. And it might not be of interest unless it's high up on their agenda. But as things go on, I think it will become more and more prevalent.
Because those areas used to talk about social housing, they spec a certain board, smoke alarm, lights. I don't see why they can't spec a certain cable type as well.
There is an education piece to go there, like Andy says, on the wider picture. But what I like about what you guys are doing, and you're doing this more than anyone I've seen in the market, is you're making that leap, like I talked about earlier, through the wholesaler into the installer, doing things like this with us at Napier to educate our members. You know, you do some great stuff on social media. So that is getting out there, and that's kudos to you guys, really, because Commercially, it's going to be good for you. Let's be honest. But actually, there's no one else doing that. And I learn so much from it. You know, when every time I visit, I learn something new. Every day is a learning day, because if you know, ignorance isn't an excuse. But actually, if we just give people a little bit more information to make informed decisions, it's going to be better for the safety of the industry, because that's what we're passionate about. You know, and our members doing things safely. So if they're putting in substandard imported cable that doesn't fit the bill, I mean, the one that's sticking in my head at the moment is. And you mentioned it, Aaron, the build-up of heat. You know, you group that with a load of other cables, we're making that, we're magnifying that and making it worse, and then that current carrying capacity is just reduced, where I'm thinking, is it going to meet disconnection times, you know, that cable's performance?
Well, yeah,
and is it going to cause the fire itself, the actual cable?
And the conductor size as well. It's really key, isn't it, for your resistance values. It's going to have a massive effect.
Yeah, and if you're getting some dodgy R1, R2, and you think that doesn't seem right, because I know what roughly that should be based on the meterage of cable that I've installed. Someone's got a click in your head where your R1 and R2 values are, that seems a bit ridiculous. And it could be something, because that minute difference where they've just, cable size is smaller.
I have a theory about, you know, the IR tests. People will do tests and they might get a leg that's lower reading than the other ones, and then they're trying to figure out what it was. So in our compound plan, it's 100% pass rate. So when you start up a compound plant to make the PVC compounds, before you get it up to speed, the material's underworked and it doesn't have the same properties. We actually dispel all that into a recycled box, and only once it passes and the operator goes and tests it and it passes, we then use it for making finished cable. A lot of the factories I've been to overseas, they just start up and that 500 kilos becomes part of the 20-ton batch. And there's no way of proving it, but I think some of these low IR readings, dodgy IR readings, are probably linked to that bit in the run where, for a short period of time, it's got that bit of the batch that isn't worked properly. Yeah. But that's just a theory.
Yeah. I think
no way to prove it.
Plausible, though.
But like you said, electricians will be thinking, is it something they've done? Like you said about these values, you'd be checking your connections, you'd be double checking, and actually it could be the cable, and nothing they've done. Yeah. And again, that could cost you time on the job.
Yeah, you're right. Aaron, I just want to move on to a subject that you've done a lot of work on and you're doing some future work on, and we're going to work with you on that. And we did an article piece for our internal Contour Person magazine and for Professional Electrician, which looked at fire performance cables. Now, we can't go into massive detail with that, but we just want to touch on that on this podcast, because it's an important area that I think is really misunderstood. So when we talk about fire performance, to me, we're dealing with cables that, is it a cable that needs to sort of, not emit those fumes, toxic stuff and horrible brown and black gases in the building, or is it a cable that needs to maintain the integrity of the circuit? And going from that sort of, let's say, the low smoke and fume halogen free up to actual fire resistant cables, which, like, you know, when we talk about MIC fire tough cables and those kind of things.
Go on, sneak our brand name in.
Fire. You did tell me, and I forgot it.
It's going to be on there.
Fire Shores. Fire Shores. Sorry, I should have remembered that. So it's behind me as well.
A selfless plug.
And Fire Shore. We talked earlier that when that first came on the market, you know, people sort of, is this the same as MIC? Because we did a lot of hotels, and I'm going to show my age here, Trustase 40s, which for our younger listeners won't have a clue that was a hotel brand.
What's one of them?
Oh, here we go. I'm supposed to have my back, Andy. And I remember we just did all those in MICC, pyro to you old school electricians out there, but that's a brand name as well. So we used to install that, and then when this kind of other option came there, we were like, oh, this isn't the same, this can't be as good. But we were talking earlier, but anyway, I digress. Tell us a little bit, just in a, you know, about sort of those misconceptions or myths in the industry about those fire performance cables.
Yeah, so those standards have been developed over a number of years, and we've sort of added to it, and we built a package of standards. And that's where it gets a bit confusing for people, because there's so many different fire standards. You've got BS6387 category C, W and Z. So one's fire and shock, one's fire on its own, one's then water on its own. There's 5200, which is just fire and shock, 5200 Annex E, which has then got water.
I'm impressed with your memory on this one. He's not even reading this from anything, are
they?
So you've got all these ones, and then you've got 7629, which is the cable standard. So to specify all those on the specification, it's quite long-winded. So people tend to specify the fire performance tests. Mm. So they'll then specify 5200 or 6387 category CWZ. And they might not specify the 7629 part on there. And that's what the biggest thing in the industry at the minute is. We've seen this cost-driven approach to business. When you look at getting third-party approvals, 7629 is one of the most expensive approvals because it covers pretty much all the cable construction. You've got the actual materials, whether it's copper, conductor resistance, all the mechanical performance. So people are starting to drop that from their third-party approvals and then only keep the fire standards. So you might see something with an LPCB third-party approval on the cable. BS7629 might be on the cable, but that's the manufacturer's declaration. And if you look at the LPCB certificate, it's only covering a couple of fire tests.
Oh, wow.
But again, it just comes back to that trust of where you're buying from me, because it's so complicated to get
with my installer head on. I shouldn't be worrying about this. I should be buying a product that is ticking the boxes.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't got that. I can't know everything as an installer. Us in this world, yes, we have a little bit more knowledge, but as I'm thinking installers, you're just going to get your cable and install it, and it's met the standards that it needs to meet.
And I'm thinking about from a design perspective on larger commercial industrial jobs, you know, there's an education piece for them. We can all say, oh, they should know, but actually they could be misinformed or not know.
Yeah, and it has become really confusing. So that's BS7629. If someone's not third-party approved to that, there could be steel conductors. That's obviously not going to happen, but they could be steel conductors. It still carry the certificate because it's going to meet the fire tests. It'd be the thing that caused the fire in the first place, it'd still have the approval certificate, as they've only tested the fire resistance part of it. But copper clad aluminium is not too far away. We've seen that in the market even in the past 2 years. We've seen cables with copper clad aluminium, and it's just a confusing because there's so many tests. People regularly ask for PH120 cable, and the wholesalers ask us for PH120. The PH120 means the duration it will last the test, so 120 minutes.
Is that before it actually decomposes, melts?
Before it fails, yeah.
Fails.
So you can have something PH30, 60, 90 or 120. Mm-hmm. But it's how long it actually survives in that fire before circuit integrity
fails. And is there a certain temperature as well that it will hit?
The failure point is just when the circuit integrity fails and the circuit gives up. But the point that you've just mentioned is the one, there's so many different fire tests. Asking for PH120 is only asking for a small portion of what's needed because it's relevant to a particular fire test.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a standard cable, which is PH120 to BSEN 5200, and that is a standard cable. It wouldn't ever meet the enhanced requirement, but there is a PH120 test that you can have for enhanced cables. And there's just so much confusion there where it's really easy to get confused.
Yeah, when I was working on that article, I was doing a lot of research as well for myself to obviously produce the article, and say it can be confusing. One of the biggest things from our members and an installer point of view, which I think and designers make this error, is when you talk about something like low smoke and fume, We assume then that I need some, or they might even use a generic term like we say earth all the time when we mean CPC. But Sparky's use these generic terms to say, oh, I need some fireproof cable.
Yeah.
But that's such a generic term, like you said. Not only is that low smoke and fume, halogen free, or actual fire resistant, retardant, whatever it may be. Yeah. There's so many variants to that, and the one I've seen quite a lot in the industry is that if it needs to be some halogen free or zero halogen, but there's so many phrases for that as well, never mind that actually people are going for that low smoke and fume option thinking it's halogen free and it's not.
Yeah.
Or it's going to maintain the integrity of the circuit for, you know, people to get out the building or for firefighters to get in the building, and it's not. So we need that education, and I think it's great that you're doing some work on that to say, look, this does this, and these are the standards and the tests, like you mentioned, associated with it. Because like you say, there's so many tests. I mean, the first one you mentioned back in the, I think it was the 80s, they did a fire test, so they burnt the cable basically, which seems fine, but then they says, oh, there might be impacts, things falling on it, the vibration of the building during a fire. And also then we're thinking with firefighters coming in spraying powerful hoses on it as well, it needs to withstand that. So then that's why we've got these enhanced tests that actually do that on the cable.
Yeah, and it wasn't until like the 2000s when someone said, oh, actually all those things happen together.
Yeah.
And that was EN5200 Annex E. So now you've got fire, shock and water mixed together. They were all separate before. Mm. And some of it is, laziness is the wrong word, but when you look at a specification to specify a fire cable properly, there should be writing in every spec. It's third party approved to BS762 name, 331, 6387 category CWZ, 5200 pH 120, 5200 Annex E pH 30, and that should be the spec.
Is that going to go on the side of the cable?
Yes, that is on the side of the cable, yeah. That's on there.
I dread to see your printing costs.
Yeah. 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 You know, yeah.
Yeah, what most people do is they'll write FP200.
Mm,
yeah. Because Prismian did a fantastic job, and FP200 is still a great product. Mm. And I would see our Fireshore 500 as a direct competitor. Mm. But they write FP200 because that's the brand name. People then swap that out because someone's got an FP200 copy.
Yeah.
And most of the copies aren't actually to the same specification.
Yeah.
Whereas so, I know that ours is, and again, it comes back to that. Just buy from a manufacturer, you can pick the phone up and have a conversation. And I can explain how ours is the same as Prismian FP200 in all these different third-party approvals. You'll get another one, and it just isn't, yeah. And they haven't got the same specs.
Yeah, I think, so, you know, we've talked about a range of cables today, but I think if you're looking at fire safety, especially after things like Grenfell, you know, the horrible, tragic underground fire we saw a few years ago, I think that, you know, that's got to be spec properly. I mean, that's people's lives at stake with that, yeah, one, isn't it? That's just crazy to cut corners on that one. And like I say,
and the cables you usually use for like essential supplies, like a fire alarm system, maybe some emergency lighting, you know, supplies that you need in emergencies, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's what that cable's designed to be used for. So very important that it is cable.
We've achieved the same with EV Ultra, I think, the brand that we created in the innovation of power and data. We're aware of some copies out there of that, and it's the same thing. People ask for EV Ultra, and it gets swapped out for something. It's pretty much the same as the FP200 scenario that Prismian created. They're not the same. EV Ultra is the only one that's got third-party basic approval, and when you look at combining power and data, it's just so complex. That's why no one had done it before, you know, to actually get consistently performing cable, and someone will switch that out for another supplier. They're nowhere near the same, quite worryingly far apart, some of them.
Yeah, and you just mentioned there some of your other products. I know we did, a podcast a while back now where we talked about those, but it's worth mentioning again for our listeners and watchers. Just tell us briefly about some of those. I mean, you've produced, in conjunction with people like Sam from Oval Renewables, some amazing products to make the installer's life easier, really, that are sort of innovative. I mean, no one else was doing it. Like you say, you've got copycats now doing your thing. But EV Ultra was out there first. No one had ever got that. They were finding all kinds of techniques to running a cable to a car charger using steel wide armoured, some kind of random flex. Hopefully no YY and SY. Talked about, well, let's not get into that. It could be a different podcast. And then PV Ultra, and now you've got Earthshore. So just talk us briefly about those kind of products and what benefit they are to installers.
Yeah, so I think what you mentioned at the start then, no one else is doing that. And we're looking at investing in the factory in the next 18 months. We're just about finalising about £4 million worth of investment in new machines to actually make us more efficient, more capacity. There's just no one doing that in the UK cable industry because it's all gone overseas, and everything is cost driven. And we're just trying to fly the flag for British manufacturing and say, no, people do care and they want a better product and they want something that's going to save them time. And EV Ultra, PV Ultra and Earthshore are three great examples of that, where the experience and knowledge that everyone's got on site have come together to say, right, how can we make electricians' lives easier and deliver them something? And they're three good examples of it. So for people that are not aware of those products, EV Ultra combines power and data. So you can run power and data in one cable and get all the benefits of a quick and easier install. PV Ultra is the first double insulator multi-core cable, so it's designed to go from DC solar panel to inverter every single time without the need for conduit DC junction boxes, etc. And then Earthshore is essentially a twin and earth, but with a pre-identified sleeved CPC in the middle. So it's got green, yellow, earth in there.
With the Earthshore, though, we spoke before about that, and you're very careful how you market that, aren't you? Because you just use very specific terms on what it actually is, because you know it's not comparable of the line and the neutral, is it? If it's take a two core.
No, it's not a layer of insulation, if you like. It is to replicate the sleeving, so it's an identification. It's green, yellow. It's not the same wall thicknesses, and that took quite a lot of time to develop. So it is BASIC approved. It's BASIC approved to a CAD, a certificate of assessed design. It should still be marked as a departure because it's not made to a British standard. But the way we got that approved, it really makes that easy, because the biggest test lab in the country is actually testing it to say it's fit for purpose. So that was the reason why we did that with Earthshore.
With Earthshore, does it come in all the sizes as well? So if round, or is it a certain size it comes in?
Depends what time you get this podcast out.
Oh, right, sorry. Sorry.
No, it's all right. We've got, at the minute, we've got so 2-core, 1mm, 1.5 and 2.5. And we've got 3-core, 1mm and 1.5. And in the next couple of months, we're actually looking to fill the gaps in there. So we've got BASIC approval across the whole range. But 4, 6, 10 and 16 to come soon. But we're just trying to focus on the smaller ones, because that's where we saw more value for the end users. But people are asking for the other range, so we'll be filling them in quite soon.
Yeah, I did a bit of my history as an electrician, without boring everyone to death, was like I did a lot of commercial industrial as I started my apprenticeship moving into my early 20s, but then sort of I did the house installs and the rewires later in life. And thinking back now, and you've seen the product, and we're going to have a little go play with it later, it's like, why has this never been done before? It's like, you know, you've got your, we talked before about having your little bit of green and yellow tied to your belt
or in your mouth. It's the electrician's mark, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so much easier. And the competition me and Andy are going to have a go at later just proves that it's a time saving, and it's really comparable on price, isn't it, that one?
We worked out it's between about 12 and 15%. So when we actually measure people wiring a socket, you wouldn't think it's that much, but it's about 12 to 15% time saving. And it seems to be the same. If someone takes 8 minutes to wire a socket, they spend 40 seconds trying to get the green yellow sleeving up because they're just poor with hand tools.
Or go and fetch it from the van.
Yeah, and if someone takes 2 minutes, it takes them 8 seconds, so it seems quite comparable. But yeah, we're happy with the product. And
I think your products that you produce, like I say, I'm not just saying it because you sat in front of me and a Doncaster cable and you're taking us out for a 4-course lunch later, is absolutely really, really good. So all credit to you. And I know you don't stop in that as well. You're always thinking of what's next. You know, we ain't got time to go in today, but when you think about, you know, the decision for PV Ultra to be made with an SWA on it, I know that's caused some debate in the industry, the right and wrongs, and people will disagree and agree on that. But I think you're always thinking, what does the installer need? And I think if you don't lose that mindset, that's going to be a benefit for you to have that conversation.
That's where I've done a couple of things now, but where we're just asking for support from electricians, as much as they can support us across the range that we're making. We could spend 12 months in an R&D department trying to save 20 pence a reel on twin and earth and reducing copper and everything else. Or we can spend 12 months like we did and produce something like EV Ultra. And as long as we're getting the support and we can make the business sustainable, we can carry on investing our R&D time into new products that can benefit the electricians in bigger ways than just saving a bit of money on the twin and earth, really, or on another product.
I think that's been really useful. Yeah. Anything else, Andy?
I'm looking forward to the factory tour when I get my hands on this Earthshore, because I haven't used it yet, so that'd be interesting to see how that is. And yeah, looking forward to that part.
Aaron, anything else you want to bring up before we bring it to a close?
No, I think we've covered everything. Just a reminder that people have got a choice. People have got a choice over what they buy and what they specify, and that's the biggest thing for me.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest takeaway from me as well. It's like, you know, like you say, if we're going to go in and ask for certain stuff in a wholesaler, let's do that with a cable and be sensible and know what we're getting. because we want that quality there, don't we? You know, we hear this term race to the bottom far too much. It's overused in industry, but it is a really relevant term, especially in the world of renewables, other electrical installs. You know, let's make sure that we are doing that, and I know you guys are leading that, so fair play to you. So, Andy, I'll leave you to do the outro, because I always forget it.
Okay, then, so thanks everyone for listening to the podcast. Stay safe, stay grounded, and keep that current flowing.
Thanks, everybody.